Unit 37. Exercise 2. Page 77.
The subject of this week's edition of Lives of the Lucky is someone who has been described as the original accidental hero. He is a poet, a traveller, a recording artist, a businessman, and most recently, a successful author, whose best-selling autobiography, Present Perfect, Past Imperfect, came out last month. I am, of course, talking about Neville Blake, or Neville Fossington Gore Blake, to give him his full name. We will be talking to Neville about his book and his perfect present later on in the programme. But before we do that, we have asked his lifelong friend, Crispin Point and Stick, to give us a brief summary of the many ups and downs that have characterised what Neville himself calls his imperfect past. Crispin.
Neville was born into an aristocratic family of landowners. His family, however, were penniless, and accordingly he was sent to the local comprehensive school, Vidler's High. It wasn't easy for poor old Neville. He was weak and short-sighted, and he had been thrown into an environment where impoverished aristocrats were less than welcome. To his credit, Neville never refused to stand up for himself. And everyone at his school wanted to push an aristocrat around. The results of his 6 years at Vidler's were plain to see. He had been punched so many times that his face looked like a badly made pizza which had been repeatedly dropped and used as a kitchen football. He was, in short, an extremely ugly young man. It came as something of a surprise then when, at the age of 19, he managed to marry the stunningly beautiful Roxanne Madonna, a young lady whom he met in the local supermarket. He fell head over heels in love, and despite the fact that she refused to be seen in public with him, he believed he had found the woman of his dreams, and he loved her accordingly. It was this love that awakened and fueled a creative spark in him. And it was at this time that he started writing poetry, lots of it. Neville's poetry was absolutely dreadful. But these were the 60s and someone discovered him, believing him to be a psychedelic Shakespeare. His work was published, attained cult status, and sold millions. He was rich, he was famous, but he wasn't happy. And understandably so. All his money, all the public recognition he received, didn't stop Roxanne from leaving him. She didn't care about what he had achieved. And losing Roxanne broke his heart. The effect of Roxanne's departure was twofold. Neville stopped writing and he left England for Asia. He spent the next 4 years wandering the jungles and mountains of India and Nepal, searching for enlightenment and spiritual healing. Occasionally, I would receive a crumpled postcard from him, telling me about the weather and how he had heard about a reclusive spiritual leader, the Rami Rama, who was reportedly living and teaching in the Nepalese mountains. It was whilst looking for this man that he became the first person to climb the west side of Everest. Bearing in mind that Neville was afraid of heights, this was an extraordinary feat. Ironically, driven by a powerful, almost overbearing need to find himself, he had got lost, mistakenly believing that the Rami Rama's monastery was on top of the mountain, when in fact it was at the bottom. News of his exploits not only reached Britain, where he became a national hero, but it also reached the Rami Rama, who invited him to study at his monastery. Given that, at the time, the Rami Rama was acknowledged to be Nepal's greatest and most influential spiritual teacher, It is perhaps a little surprising that Neville succeeded in learning absolutely nothing about himself, and even less about Eastern philosophy. Neville returned to England a disappointed man. He threw himself into high-profile projects, using his status as a national hero to get where he wanted to go. He brought out an album. He toured with the Rolling Stones. He was constantly on television doing chat shows and appearing in shampoo advertisements. He was adored and had become a household name. But he was still deeply troubled. Salvation came in the shape of a woman called Belinda Fences. The pair met in a supermarket queue in Wolverhampton. As was his custom when he went out, Neville had disguised himself as an old lady, but Fences still recognized him. They talked, they went to dinner. She said that she admired his single-mindedness, his determination to succeed, and courage. She said that she understood his pain at being left by Roxanne. She herself had just separated from her husband. Out of the blue, she offered Neville a partnership in her fledgling computer company, Macro Hard. This despite the fact that Neville had little experience of the business world and had never heard of a computer. She wanted to work with him. She needed his money. Neville said yes to Belinda. He had found a woman who admired him, who appreciated him, who was willing to make a commitment to him. Happiness flooded into Neville's life, and he swam in it. He put his heart and soul and all of his money into Macro Hard. The rest, as they say, is history.